soon. She rolled her eyes. A free evening is never really a free evening around here. As announced, Steph was dressed in a pair of jeans and a gray blazer. Drink? I'll have whatever you're having. They sat down and Steph poured wine from a bottle in an ice bucket on the coffee table. Once filled, they held up their glasses. We might end up having dinner just the two of us, but hey. She leaned forward and whispered, I've had worse company. I'll drink to that. Aurore clinked her glass against Steph's. She enjoyed Steph's company, but she would be disappointed if she failed to meet Dominique. How are you? Steph asked. Heartbreak-wise, I mean.
Oh, Vivian.
What, Vivian?
Aurore took a swig of wine.
You know, she shrugged. It takes a bit of time, but I've since come to realize she was hardly the love of my life. If she was, she wouldn't have left me.
Wise words.
Come to think of it, if she hadn't left me when she did and I hadn't called Camille to comfort me, I might not have met you, and I might not be sitting here right now.
A wonderful coincidence, Steph said.
A bustle in the hallway made Aurore sit up in her seat. The double doors flew open, and Dominique and Solange walked in.
Madame Sauve, Dominique said, hand outstretched. Enchanté.
The pleasure is all mine, Madame President.
Please, no formalities tonight. Call me Dominique.
She gestured at Solange.
You've met my chief of staff?
I have. Aurore painted a wide smile on her face and held out her hand. Good to see you again, Solange.
And you, Madame Sauve.
The same damp grip wrapped itself around Aurore's fingers.
What are we drinking?
Dominique rubbed her hands together and pecked Steph on the cheek.
Your favorite Chablis,
Steph said, and poured them both a glass.
Not for me, Solange said. I have work to do tonight.
Dominique brought her hands to her side.
Nuh-uh, Solange. If I'm not working anymore tonight, then neither are you.
Solange stared at Dominique for a second.
Fine. I'll have a small glass then. Remember my birthday dinner?
Steph said.
This one here?
She pointed at Dominique.
Had knocked back a bottle of Bordeaux, and of course, 5 minutes after we went to bed, we were woken up. Luckily, it was only...
She curled her fingers into air quotes.
The Undersecretary for Agriculture, who had been caught en flagrante with a sex worker. But imagine if it had been something really important and you'd had to make a difficult decision.
I'm the president of France, for crying out loud. If I'm no longer allowed to have a bottle of wine on my partner's birthday, she scoffed, then what's the point?
This time Dominique held up her glass.
Welcome, Aurore. Steph speaks highly of you.
She fixed her gaze on Aurore for a split second, and Aurore felt that tingle again in her stomach. She'd seen Dominique Laroche on television countless times, but standing next to her was of another order entirely. The president oozed charisma and, as soon as she'd entered, had become the natural center of attention in the room.
I've been instructed not to talk about sperm tonight, so I shall hold my tongue, unless you have something to say on the matter.
Dominique glanced at Steph and winked at her. Clearly no one, not even her partner, could tell Dominique Laroche what to do.
It's not exactly my favorite topic of conversation either,
Aurore said. She stole a glance at Solange to see if her face had lightened up at all.
Not just yet. But we can't deny it's instrumental for certain things.
Oh, come on, Steph objected. We barely had a sip of wine.
What do you want to talk about then, chérie? Dominique asked.
Anything but semen. Haven't even had my dinner yet.
Dominique broke out into a chuckle.
If you put it like that.
Aurore hadn't told Anne Riviere she was coming here tonight. As far as she was concerned, this was indeed a private dinner.
Inevitably, politics would come up.
How could it not? But discussing the bill wasn't the goal of the dinner. Aurore at least had very different motives, such as melting the ice queen sitting next to her. It was as though when she looked at Steph and Dominique, the room radiated with warmth, and when she looked to her left where Solange was twirling her glass in her hands without drinking from it, a cold front hung stubbornly in the air.
Solange, Steph started. What do you usually do of an evening?
She locked her gaze on Solange, not giving her any way out. Aurore felt a little sorry for her.
I think you know very well what I do, Stephanie.
Please call me Steph. No one calls me Stephanie, not even my mother.
I do, Dominique said.
Yes, well, you're the president. You're the only one I can stand doing it. When someone else calls me Stephanie, it's as if they're talking about another person.
Aurore had a long history of putting people she interviewed for her radio show at ease. It was in her nature to try and make anyone feel comfortable in her company, and she felt Steph was perhaps being a bit harsh on Solange. Although she was pretty certain Solange had been harsh on Steph many times in return.
Let me guess, the chief of staff is a raging workaholic?
Aurore gave Solange her best smile.
I have to be.
Solange is my secret weapon, Dominique said. Without her, the country would be in great disarray.
High praise indeed.
Aurore tried to read Solange's face.
Was that a tiny hint of pride?
I love to work, so I shouldn't I, Solange offered.
You must do something to relax. Not even the greatest workaholics can be in work mode all the time. We already know the president likes to knock back a bottle of Bordeaux.
Aurore cut her glance to Dominique.
Nothing wrong with that, of course.
She tried to smile, hoping to see it mirrored on Solange's face.
I, for instance, love to watch reality TV. There's a show about cats.
Aurore chuckled at the mere thought of it.
They film them and give them a personality and make up stories about them. It's silly, but brilliant.
Cat's eyes, Solange said.
I've seen it. It's a bit more silly than brilliant, you must admit. It does what it's supposed to do with great efficiency. Maybe that's not quite brilliance, but it is wonderful. It makes me laugh, even when I don't much feel like laughing.
Aurore sipped from the wine, which was excellent and just the right temperature.
That's not to say I don't also like a nice glass of wine, of course.
I like to read, Solange said. Reading the newspaper doesn't count as relaxation when you're chief of staff at the Élysée, Dominique said.
Says the woman who likes to fall asleep while watching the late-night news, Steph said.
Not always. Dominique shot Steph a warm smile. And I have you to relax me. They both certainly seemed very relaxed at the moment. Seeing Steph and the president enjoy each other's company soothed Aurore in return. Clearly they were comfortable enough around her to talk to each other in this way. She stole another glass at Solange, who still sat stiffly in her chair, her fingers cramped around the stem of her wine glass.
What do you like to read?
Aurore asked Solange.
The classics, Solange said.
A new silence fell. Aurore could make neither head nor tail of this woman. Even though she believed there was as much to be gleaned of a person's temperament by what they didn't say as by what did come out of their mouth, it made things a bit more challenging. But most of Aurore's life was a challenge. Getting people to talk about their sex lives, going against Goody Two-Shoes, many of whom were members of Dominique Laroche's political party whenever it was needed, falling for the wrong kind of woman, although the latter wasn't that much of a deliberate choice. She remembered the thought she'd had the other day. She needed to get Solange Garceau alone. People were often so different when you got to speak to them on their own. Aurore imagined it must be very hard for Solange to let her guard down this evening. She was having dinner with her boss, after all. She vowed to reserve further judgment on Solange until she'd had the opportunity to have a decent conversation with her. Not when Solange was cast in the part as nanny to Steph, or as chief of staff to the president, but just as a woman in the world going about her day-to-day life.
How about some dinner? Dominique said.
I don't know about you, but I'm starving. Aurore was seated next to Steph, and if she wished the other two women away, she could be having a tête-à-tête with the president. Oh, to be able to ask her the question she asked certain guests on her show. But that would never be possible, even when Dominique was no longer in office. Once a president, always a president. Even though it would certainly be a coup if someone of Dominique's caliber spoke freely about the most beautiful connection possible between human beings. Then again, Dominique Laroche had already given up much more of her private life than any of her male counterparts who had come before her. That coming out interview she'd done must have meant a lot to a great deal of people. It had meant a lot to Aurore, who had been out and proud for 30 years.
I used to listen to your radio show once in a while, Dominique said, before I went on the campaign trail and my every minute had to be accounted for. When anyone said they listened to the show, it always seemed like they were sharing a secret, as if listening to Sexualité Aujourd'hui was so different from listening to any other radio show. But Aurore was used to the tone of confidentiality it inspired in people. It's an honor to be able to count you among my listeners. Aurore wanted to ask Solange if she sometimes listened, but she didn't want to catch her out. It's a very important show, Steph said. Not only because of the topics you address, but because of the tone you adopt. It makes all the difference. Imagine a teenager in a small town somewhere hearing you talk with such confidence about being a lesbian, or approach any other subject with such openness and positivity. Thank you. Aurore offered Steph a wide smile. Was it difficult for you to come out? Not really. First of all, I've had tomboy written all over me since I was a child, and I was raised by a single mother who didn't have much time for men. Your mother is a lesbian as well? Aurore asked. No. She just doesn't care for having men in the house. Not when I was growing up, and not now. Sounds like a woman after my own heart, Aurore said. But you are a lesbian, Solange said. She'd been so quiet, Aurore had almost forgotten she was there. Most likely because Aurore was sitting across from Dominique, who sucked all the attention towards herself even when she wasn't speaking. That I very much am. Aurore scanned Solange's face. Surely she couldn't have meant it as a recrimination, not with the company she was keeping. It seems to be all the rage these days. Sexual fluidity, especially amongst women. As if every woman needs to have at least kissed another woman, lest she not be in touch with her own sexuality, Solange said. Aurore narrowed her eyes. Something was clearly bubbling beneath the surface here. I think it's more a sign of the times we live in. Women finally feel confident enough to have different experiences and to express themselves, she said. Even tonight, this is what we're talking about. When there are a million topics of conversation that are more interesting, you're having dinner with the president, for heaven's sake. Don't you want to ask her about her accomplishments? About the measures she has taken to create more jobs? The difficult pension reform she's trying to pull off? Isn't all of that far more important? Someone has a chip on her shoulder, Steph said. As a matter of fact, I do. Solange's words were still clipped and measured, but her pitch had risen. I was invited to a private dinner with the president and her partner. I was only told at the very last minute that Radio Deux's sex expert was going to be here, and I certainly wasn't expecting the evening's sole topic of conversation to be sex. She turned to Dominique. I'm sorry, Madam President. I don't mean to be disrespectful in your home, but it's very clear to me how this came about, and I don't appreciate it. You mean it's very clear I invited Aurore, Steph said, her tone dripping with accusation. Solange remained silent. She looked as though she knew she had said enough. Aurore didn't know how to take the pressure off this particular situation. Enough! Dominique squared her shoulders. You two quibble like my children. She turned to Aurore. I apologize for this. I'm aware my presence can be polarizing, Aurore said. Which is exactly why Stephanie invited you, because she knew it would rile me up, Solange said. Your powers of perception never cease to amaze me, Steph said. Can you blame me? Unlike you, I do like to relax in the evening. It wouldn't have been very relaxing if it was me against you and Dominique, now would it? What was I to expect? Another lecture on how I should respect your position more? Solange stared at Steph for a few seconds, then pushed her chair back. Please, excuse me, Madam President. I wish tonight could have been different. It might have been had I not felt so ganged up on. With that, she left the dining room, and a few seconds later the double doors Aurore had walked through earlier banged shut. Dominique shook her head. That woman, Steph said. You should have cut her some slack. Of course, it's my fault again. Not uptight, judgmental, too righteous for her own good, Solange, Steph said. I think I'd better go too. Aurore rose. It was an honor to meet you, Dominique. Truly. Aurore held out her hand. She could hardly storm out the way Solange had done,
even though part of her felt like doing exactly that. Staff had more or less admitted that she wanted to use her as a pawn against Solange at this dinner. The prospect had excited Aurore a tad, but actually experiencing it was far more uncomfortable. You don't have to go, Aurore. Staff stood as well. At least let me apologize. I didn't know Solange was going to react like this.
You should have known,
Dominique said. Aurore needed to get out of there fast. As intriguing as it was to get a glimpse into the president's private life, she had no desire to witness an argument between her and her partner. That was too intimate, even for her. I'll walk you out, Steph said. I believe I can find my own way. Aurore gave Steph an awkward kiss on the cheek. She turned to Dominique, who was still sitting, and held out her hand. Dominique gave it a firm shake while she fixed her gaze steadily on Aurore's. Aurore gathered her belongings and, once outside the living room doors, was escorted out by the same man who had let her in. Episode 16. Dominique. Tell me honestly. As usual, Dominique found it hard to remain annoyed with Steph for long. Was it really too hard to pretend to like Solange? Just for one evening? Apparently it was. Steph sulked in the corner of the sofa. Dominique plonked down next to her, but didn't touch her. Not yet. I simply can't have you at war with my chief of staff, babe. You need to find a way to get along.
How about her? Doesn't she have to find a way? She had a chance to make an effort all night long, but no. She just stormed off.
Can you blame her?
Yes, of course I can. The evening was pleasant enough. Aurore was a great guest, but of course Solange had to take personal offense.
So it wasn't a personal attack on your part?
Steph sighed.
She doesn't like me. I might as well have the word lesbian written all over me, and Solange can't deal with that. Nor can she deal with the fact that you love me. I bet her fantasies consist of you meeting some handsome man you fall head over heels in love with. She doesn't care about your personal happiness, let alone mine. In fact, I suspect her of having homophobic tendencies.
Solange is not a homophobe. She's just protective of me,
which she is paid to be. Have you asked her?
Asked her what? Whether she has a problem with me being with a woman?
Dominique tapped her fingers against her knee.
Of course I haven't.
Well, you should.
That's not the kind of relationship we have.
Clearly.
Steph visibly relaxed her muscles.
Some people just can't deal with it. The hatred runs so deep it's locked away in a place where they can't touch it, let alone change it.
Solange doesn't hate me.
Dominique couldn't believe what she was hearing.
Not you, but certain aspects of you. She clearly hates me.
Solange doesn't hate you either, babe. Come on.
Steph turned towards her, her eyes ablaze with something fiery.
You think I haven't come across people like her before in my life? She can usually hide it underneath a veneer of professionalism and by keeping a distance. But tonight she could barely contain her rage. She stormed out on you. On the president. Simply because Aurore's presence agitated her so much. Aurore and me, of course. Two out lesbians. And you? You've probably been her idol for a long time, then her candidate, now her president. Now she has to stomach that you go to bed with me every night. No wonder she exploded like that. I do have to hand it to her. It's the first time I've seen such emotion in her.
I think you've got her all wrong, babe. I really do.
Dominique didn't know how to make Steph understand, but she had to keep on trying.
I've known Solange for a long time. I spend a lot of time with her. She dealt with our affair being exposed like a pro. I'm sure from a campaign standpoint, she would have preferred things to be otherwise. But I'm equally sure she wants me to be happy.
Of course she dealt with it like a pro. She is a pro. Too much of one if you ask me.
Either way, Dominique braced herself. You're going to have to apologize to her.
Steph's eyes grew wide.
Me? Apologize to her? Not if she doesn't apologize to you, Aurore, and me first.
You're the one who invited Aurore when you knew damn well what that would do to Solange, who was already on edge because I forced her to have a private dinner with us. You know what she's like. You should be the bigger person here.
What if I refuse?
I really wish you wouldn't. Dominique let her knees scoot against Steph's.
I will not be attacked by someone simply for being who I am. That's not a message I want to send. I don't care to whom.
You are hardly under attack.
I didn't feel attacked. Why do I feel as though you're not taking my side?
Because I'm not taking sides. I refuse to get sucked into this. I have a budget meeting with the cabinet tomorrow. That's what's on my mind. Not that you and Solange can't stand each other.
You're too honest for a politician sometimes.
See, that's something Solange would say. You do have common ground.
Steph rolled her eyes.
Despite what you just claimed, you do care. Why else would you have invited Solange to dinner?
Of course I care. I just don't have time for it.
Admittedly, asking her was a spur-of-the-moment decision. But I thought I could kill two birds with one stone. Eat, and bring you two closer together. Steph stretched her hands above her head.
At least you got to eat.
And I got to meet an interesting woman. I can see why you like Aurore. She's very charismatic. She's got that je ne sais quoi.
Steph quirked an eyebrow and fixed her gaze on Dominique.
You're not jealous of my brand new friend, are you?
No, babe. I don't have time for that either. Besides, I'll get you to marry me soon enough.
Dominique wasn't so sure of the latter part of her statement. Steph could be as stubborn as an entire family of mules. She was still hoping for Claire and Margot's fast-approaching wedding to loosen Steph up and make her grow fonder of the prospect of becoming someone's wife. Truth be told, although she hadn't shared this with Steph, and was even a little dismayed at her own thoughts in that direction, a wedding during her presidency would surely help her approval ratings. Steph mock-sighed, then smiled, and grabbed Dominique's hand.
You're just going to wear me out asking again and again. I'm just going to end up marrying you out of pure exhaustion. Is that truly the unromantic kind of wedding you want?
Dominique reciprocated Steph's smile and was reminded of why she had fallen for her. Not for the dreamy look in her bright blue eyes, or for the smooth youthfulness of her skin, but for the unshakable confidence that allowed her to always say exactly what she thought.
Morning.
Solange was unable to look Dominique in the eye.
I made some notes last night for the budget proposal. You'll find them on your desk.
Dominique glanced at the clock.
She had a minute to quiz her chief of staff.
When did you get here this morning?
My usual time,
Solange said.
Which is?
6:30.
And when you arrived home last night, you decided to make some notes on the budget?
I wanted to go over it again. Make sure everything is correct before you go into the meeting. They're just small comments on a few minor points.
Then why even bother?
Dominique gestured at the chair across from her desk.
It's not your job to occupy yourself with minor points, Solange. Sit for a minute.
When Dominique said it like that, Solange couldn't refuse, even though it was written all over her face that she wanted to.
This term is far from over, and I want to run again. I need you by my side, Solange. I appreciate the hours you put in, but you have to rest. Everyone does, me included.
How many hours did you sleep last night? Solange's posture stiffened, and she swung one rigid leg over the other.
5 or 6. I don't need more.
Dominique let a short silence fall, waiting to see if Solange would say anything about storming out last night. She didn't.
Are you all right?
If Solange wasn't going to bring it up, Dominique bloody well would.
After last night?
Solange performed her version of a nod, a curt jut of the chin. Steph's words ran through Dominique's head.
Was Solange a secret homophobe? No, she couldn't be. If she was, how could she possibly stomach working for Dominique? Dominique also knew not to wait for an apology. Solange had apologized to her last night. She wouldn't repeat those words. She knew that as far as her chief of staff was concerned, the matter had been dealt with.
Fine, let's talk about the budget then.
Solange cleared her throat. There is something else. Something delicate.
What is it?
I dug something up on that woman, Orosov. I should have done it sooner, but I presumed Stephanie had her vetted.
Solange uncrossed her legs.
You wouldn't expect it of a political advisor, but then again, she's advising the socialists, and we know all about their permissive ways.
Just tell me.
It wasn't like Solange to beat around the bush like that. She starred in an adult movie.
Solange paused.
Orosov is a porn actress.
Dominique's jaw slacked.
You should urge Stephanie to break contact with her immediately. If this comes out, and it will.
Solange paused.
It really didn't take much digging for me to find the video online. It can only reflect badly on you.
Dominique shook her head in disbelief.
I can't believe this. I can send you the evidence. Did you watch it? The video? About as much as I could stomach to make sure it was really her.
Pure disgust clung to Solange's tone.
You're absolutely certain it's Aurore in the video? 100%. Send the link to my private account.
If this was true, and she trusted Solange to have done her homework on this, Dominique had to show Steph.
I will,
Solange said, her tone a lot lighter than before.
Steph. I'm so sorry about last night, Steph said into the phone. I wish things could have been more civilized.
Don't worry about it. They were interesting, at least. What more could I wish for?
Politeness from the chief of staff, perhaps?
Steph said, unable to keep irritation out of her voice.
How did Dominique react?
Steph scoffed.
She wants me to apologize to Solange. Apparently, I provoked her.
Well, Aurore wasn't one to mince her words.
Do you think I provoked her as well?
I think you know that you did. I don't think that particular bit of knowledge is the issue at all.
Were you not offended by what Solange said?
Offended? God, no.
Aurore scoffed.
I've been called much worse than a lesbian. I am, in fact, a lesbian. You know what I mean. Look, Steph. We haven't known each other for that long, so I have to ask. Do you want to hear what I really think? Or do you want me to pander to you?
Of course I want to hear what you really think.
Even though Steph was able to inject conviction in her tone, her stomach tightened at the prospect.
Yes, Solange is uptight. She probably needs a shag, and a semblance of a private life. She has that written all over her. But she wants what's best for the president. So do you. From what I witnessed, there's some serious rivalry going on between you. It happens especially in the upper echelons of politics. The sad thing is that by being the way you are with each other, you're not giving Dominique your best at all. Neither one of you is.
Oh, Christ. Not you as well.
Steph didn't care that she had her hackles up.
You're a reasonable person. I might not know you that well, yet, but I know that much.
Are you suggesting I apologize to Solange as well?
It wouldn't hurt anyone if you did. On the contrary.
So I really am the only one offended by her harsh words? Or did I hear something else in you and Dominique? She did literally say she didn't appreciate you being there, and that there are too many lesbians in the Élysée.
Indeed, she did say these things. But anyone willing could see that the woman was feeling threatened. I'm sure in the cold, hard light of day, she regrets everything she said.
It's all down to me, then.
Steph was beginning to have doubts. She had expected Dominique to stand by her chief of staff, but she had surely expected Aurore to be on her side.
I'm not one to cast blame, Steph. It's not something I believe in. If you don't want to apologize, then don't, because it won't solve anything if you don't mean it. But if I may be so bold as to suggest such a thing, you should consider ways of getting along with her better. She's there and you're there. Perhaps you're feeling a little threatened yourself.
Threatened? By that sexless, emotionless creature? Give me a break. I think I'm the only one who sees her for who she really is. Dominique relies on her for her job, but you? How could she possibly have swayed you, Aurore? I don't understand.
You won't understand until you decide to give her a break.
A break? You know what I should give her instead? A date with a top-notch gigolo. You just said it yourself. That's what Solange Garceau needs most of all.
Aurore's hearty chuckle beamed through the receiver.
Those are your words entirely, not mine. I won't quote you on them.
Listen, Steph, call me anytime. I'm here if you need to talk. Just don't invite me to the Elysee for a while.
Deal,
Steph said.
After they rang off, she sat thinking about her conversation with Aurore for long minutes. Was she really being so unreasonable? When she couldn't see things clearly and needed an outside opinion, there was only one person she could talk to. She opened a new internet browser window on her computer and surfed to the private chat window where she could reach Marion, her counselor. After speaking with Marion, Steph decided to give Solange one chance. But if the woman so much as gave her a fake smile or a sneering comment, she could stuff her apology where the sun didn't shine. She nodded at Madame Moreau, who had acquired the habit of letting Steph go where she pleased, and only stopped her from penetrating the heart of the Élysée when Dominique was in a meeting in her office. But Steph wasn't there to see Dominique. She had come to see Solange. She rapped on the door and waited.
Oui.
The same sharp tone as usual. Steph swung the door wide and decided to remain as close to it as possible, in case she needed to escape quickly. She and Solange didn't often find themselves in a room just the two of them. Standing in the doorframe was already uncomfortable enough.
Stephanie, Solange said.
What can I do for you?
Was that a hint of a smile on her face?
I came to say I'm sorry about last night. Perhaps it wasn't the best idea to invite Aurore. It was poor judgment on my part. I apologize.
Apology appreciated and accepted. Solange sat there smiling like a sphinx. Steph didn't have anything else to say to Solange. Solange wasn't the most adept at small talk, and Steph simply didn't have it in her to talk about meaningless things with the woman.
Great. Thanks. I'll leave you to it.
Steph waited a few more seconds, just to see if Solange would give her an apology in return. Something that was definitely warranted from Steph's point of view. But none came. She closed the door behind her and went upstairs, deciding what to do with her evening. She didn't feel like curling up on the sofa with Pierrot. She hadn't seen Nadia for too long. She pulled her phone from her pocket and, out of habit, before dialing her friend's number, checked Dominique's calendar, which was updated several times throughout the day. In the beginning, Steph had made the mistake of not checking the calendar for last-minute changes to Dominique's schedule, not realizing that it changed so often, and she'd had to cancel previously made plans to spend some precious time with her partner. She didn't make that mistake anymore. She clicked on the app icon and noticed the change immediately. Dinner with Stephanie, it said, where earlier this afternoon some meeting had been scheduled. Steph held off from calling Nadia and hurried up the stairs.
You'll be happy to know I apologized to Solange, Steph said before kissing Dominique on the lips. Is this unexpected dinner my reward?
Dominique shook her head. I didn't even know you'd apologized, babe. She curled her arms around Steph's waist and drew her close. There's something else I need to talk to you about.
So this is business, not pleasure.
Steph cooed into Dominique's ear. It really depends how you look at it. Dominique kissed her again, then withdrew and reached for her iPad on the table. I need to show you something,
okay?
Steph sat down and looked around for a bottle of wine. Dominique had a glass of sparkling water in front of her, which meant she had to go back to work later. There was no sign of food being prepared. Steph wasn't very hungry. She was just happy to get an hour of stolen time with Dominique. The sound on the iPad was muted when Dominique showed Steph the screen, but what the naked women in the video were doing could not be muted in any way.
What am I looking at?
Steph glanced at Dominique.
Is this a new kind of foreplay?
Look at the woman on top.
Look at her face, Dominique said. Okay.
Steph leaned closer and examined the video. She couldn't really make out the actress's face because it was mostly hidden by the other woman's thighs. She had long dark hair. That was about all Steph could make out. Then the woman took a break from what she was doing and looked straight into the camera.
Oh, Steph said. That looks very much like a young Aurore.
That's because it is a young Aurore.
Oh my.
Steph glanced up at Dominique.
Is this a new habit? Looking at online videos of dinner guests having sex?
Dominique pulled back a chair and sat down brusquely. Don't play dumb, Stephanie. This woman was here at the Élysée. Twice.
This is not a secret. Aurore talks about her past in porn regularly on her show.
Do you mean to say you knew about this video? Steph shrugged.
I was aware of it. I'd never seen it. This is from 20 years ago. How did you get this anyway?
Solange's earlier smile suddenly made sense.
Oh, for goodness sake, bloody Solange. That's why she was grinning like a madwoman earlier.
Steph blew some air through her nostrils.
I can't believe this.
This is not good. This woman was in our home. Steph took a deep breath. She didn't want to fly off the handle. She could see Dominique's point of view, but that didn't make her less enraged by the memory of Solange's treacherous smile.
If you'd known about this, she wouldn't have been allowed inside the hallowed Élysée.
Damn right she wouldn't have. What if it comes out that we had a porn star over for dinner?
Aurore is not a porn star. She advises Rivière. She knows what she's talking about. She does this country a big service every time she goes on air.
You should have done your homework on her before inviting her here. This leaves me very vulnerable.
Vulnerable to what?
Steph sank back into her chair.
I'm so sick of being scolded. Only last night Solange managed to put me down in front of you. Now I have you on my case again. For not being careful enough. For not asking the Secret Service whether I can befriend someone I really like. Someone, I might add, who has the power to help you politically. And it all comes down to one person who hates my guts. Solange Garceau.
Steph stood.
I'm sick of it, Dominique. So bloody sick of the whole thing. Only 15 minutes ago, I stood in her office apologizing to her.
Steph walked behind the chair and wrapped her fingers around the backrest, her knuckles going white.
You can eat your dinner and watch the rest of that video alone. Or, no, even better, ask Solange to keep you company.
I get the feeling you'd much prefer that to me being here anyway. She shoved the chair away from her.
I'm going out.
So much for not flying off the handle. Steph thundered down the stairs. But she'd had enough of conservative right-wing medieval politics. It was the opposite of who she was. Aurore's political views were much closer to hers than Dominique's. Steph had had enough of betraying what she truly believed in. When she reached the underground car park, she was immediately approached by someone from security. A guy she was friendly with called Albert. It brought her back to reality. Steph couldn't just take a car and drive off into the night. She had a protocol to observe. She had to at least be followed, discreetly, but still followed. She couldn't go to a bar like Le Univers and shoot the breeze with a bartender anymore. She certainly couldn't go to Le Noir and lose herself completely. Not that she wanted that. But back in the day, it was always nice to at least have the option. This life of towing the line, of always having to think of Dominique first, was what she had chosen, her love. But right at that moment, as she thought about which destination to give Albert, she wished she'd made a different choice. Camille. Camille hung up her blazer and put her purse in the chair next to her desk. She switched on her computer, looked around her office as the computer booted up, when her glance fell on a sheet of paper that hadn't been there when she left the previous evening. It was just a blank piece of paper. Maybe the cleaner who came in early had left it there by accident. If it hadn't been used, Camille would recycle it and add it to the stack in her printer. She picked it up and turned it around to examine its blankness. But it turned out to be used already after all. In slim, large letters, the word dyke was written on it, taking up most of the A4 space. Camille fought the urge to crumple it up and toss it in the trash immediately. She dug her phone out of her purse and took a picture, then added it to the folder collecting evidence of harassment she had started on Zoya's advice. Her hands might be methodical and swift while she secured the evidence, but her mind was in disarray. This was not Duflo's handiwork. He was more subtle. He wouldn't leave a piece of paper like that for anyone to find. Bernice, Camille's assistant, came into her office all the time while Camille wasn't there. Members of her team deposited reports for approval in her in-tray. Granted, the sheet had been face down, but this was not Duflo's M.O. No, this meant someone else at the Institute had been swayed against her. Someone who was appalled enough by her coming out to risk such a bold, despicable act. Camille leaned back in her chair and tried to grasp where such hatred would come from. The Centre National de la Recherche Scientifique was a scientific institute. Most of the people employed here were trained scientists, educated people whose belief systems were not influenced by religion or other non-scientific doctrines, or so Camille had believed. She eyed the folder, which had thickened at an alarming rate, because she wrote everything down. Every last little thing. She had grown so paranoid that she even took note when someone gave her a funny look in the hallway. This had been going on long enough now, and she no longer knew who to trust. She heaved a sigh at the unpleasantness she had to start the day with. It was all so unnecessary. There was already so much hatred in the world. It baffled her that her being with a woman could contribute to it. It made her despair of people. But it also made her combative. Not that Camille hadn't considered throwing in the towel. Granted, she was a bit young to retire, but she could afford to. Or she could look for another job. But that would mean admitting defeat to her bullies, and Camille refused to ever do that. She could not let the likes of Duflo win, because he might just be after her job, using any means necessary to discredit and destabilize Camille. But his minions thrived on pure hatred. Camille could not let hatred get the better of her. If they wanted a fight, she would give them one. Moreover, Camille had done nothing wrong. She just needed to bide her time, gather evidence, wait for Duflo to make a mistake, then make her move. She tried to shake off the memory of the piece of paper and cast her glance to her inbox. The week before, an anonymous email had arrived with no contents, only a subject line, saying that Camille Rousseau was no longer fit to lead her team at the CNRS. That was it. Camille had forwarded the email to Zoya and no one else. She didn't discuss any of what was going on at work with her colleagues. She only talked about it with Zoya. She only trusted her partner. What her bullies were too bigoted to realize was that the very thing they had suddenly come to despise about Camille would eventually be their downfall. In her secret battle against Duflo and his gang, Zoya was her secret weapon. In her job as foreign correspondent, Zoya met people from all walks of life, hackers like Guy, who could figure out who sent her that anonymous email with a few simple searches. Lawyers like Amina, who had pleaded successful harassment cases against homophobes before. And of course, Zoya herself, who would not rest until the culprits had all been dragged in front of a tribunal and fired. Duflo had made the mistake of trying to mess with the wrong woman. Because Camille was not alone. No bigot was going to oust her from her job, or get away with trying. Of course, this made it harder to focus on her work. But if she had to work longer hours, she would. If she had to hand deliver every report she wrote, she would. If she had to double-check every one of her team members' work, she would. If she had to turn into a paranoid, mistrusting, difficult boss for a while, she would. If it meant ending up the CNRS rid of people like Duflo and filled with people she could trust, it was worth it. She opened the report she'd been compiling the day before and went to work. No stupid piece of paper would keep her from getting the job done. Finishing this report would be her first small victory of the day. Zoya. Zoya knew Camille was under pressure at work, and perhaps her own issues faded into nothing in comparison. But then again, Zoya didn't much believe in anything fading into nothing. She had to talk to Camille. She had no choice. A relationship was a two-way street. She helped Camille as best she could, speaking to contacts she'd made and deliberately seeking out topics to report on for ANBC that put her in contact with people who could help her. Before Zoya had started presenting the Zoya Das show, she had been a halfway decent investigative journalist, and some things could never be unlearned. In a few minutes, when Camille came home from work, Zoya would sit her down and tell her about the dread that had lodged itself in the pit of her stomach. She hadn't found the exact words to express her feelings yet, but she hoped she could count on years of experience of having to talk under pressure of the spotlight to bring them to her when she needed them. It was important not to alarm Camille, just to give her an inkling of what was going on inside her head. To start a conversation so she could address her homesickness better. Steph had been right. Zoya had to talk about it. Not doing so would only lead to more of the same. More suppressed feelings that would need to surface at some point. Come here. Zoya pulled Iris onto her lap. You certainly help with my homesickness. She scratched the cat behind the ears. You wouldn't think it possible for a small furry animal to have such powers. But there you have it. Iris's ears perked up when the door opened, but she didn't jump off Zoya's lap. Are you putting ideas in Iris's head again? Before even taking off her jacket, Camille walked over to Zoya and kissed her on the lips. She already believes she's the queen of Nui. How could she? Zoya asked. When clearly, you are the one and only queen of Nui. Zoya kissed Camille again and fought against the feeling that always overtook her when she did. The urge to squash what she really felt, which was so easy to do when Camille walked through the door, but made them catch up on her much harder when Zoya was alone again. How was work? Camille shook her head. Zoya had received a picture of the sheet of paper someone had left on Camille's desk on her phone already. They kept a digital file of everything that could serve as evidence as well, a backup on both their phones, Zoya's laptop, and an external hard drive. It's after 7. I don't want to think, let alone talk about work anymore. Zoya could see how saying this pained Camille. She loved her job. When they just met, and she had tried to explain to Zoya a particular project she'd been working on, which Zoya had failed to understand without doing some research of her own, Zoya had seen the pride she took in her profession glimmer in her eyes. Un verre de vin, mon amour? Zoya asked. She still took French lessons, but her pace of learning was not as intensive anymore as in the beginning. But asking whether Camille wanted a glass of wine was one of her most used sentences, so she could manage that one quite well. Oui, volontiers, chérie, Camille replied. Zoya handed her a glass of red, and they sat and drank in silence for a bit. Iris purred in Zoya's lap. Zoya locked her gaze on Camille. She had to say something now, before the evening took its course and she lost her nerve again. Can we talk about something, or do you need more time to unwind? Zoya asked. We can talk about anything you want, my love. Camille narrowed her eyes. She looked tired. Zoya hoped they would be able to bring a case against Camille's tormentor at work soon so they could put this unpleasantness behind them. I know you've been going through a lot at work, but I've been dealing with something myself. Camille pulled her delicious lips into a small smile. I know, she said, and I haven't been very attentive to your needs. How do you mean? I know you miss home, Zoya. It's only normal that you do. Since Zoya had moved to Paris, Camille had often displayed an ability to understand things without Zoya having to spell them out. It surprised Zoya every time. "You can talk to me," Camille said. "I won't think you love me any less. You know?" Perhaps Zoya should have guessed, but she was still shocked by Camille's admission. "Of course I know Zoya, because I know you." She put her glass down. "I see you watch the ANBC news online, not with a professional eye, but with a nostalgic one. Watching the Caitlin James show every week is such a production in our home. You even watch those soaps you previously didn't have anything good to say about. You talk with your mother much more than in the beginning. You stare at that Outback screensaver on your laptop while lost in thought. Granted, I am a scientist, but I could have easily figured it out without my professional skills of deduction." "Perhaps I should have said something sooner," Zoya said. "I didn't want to worry you." "I'm a grandmother now, darling. I've seen a thing or two in my life, and have had my fair share of worries. You can tell me anything."
"It's just, I don't know, it's hard to put into words."
Zoe pointed at her stomach.
"Something that sits here, like an actual physical thing, and I don't know how to get rid of it."
"Nothing is ever just physical or just emotional."
"It's not as if I don't love being here with you. That means everything to me."
"One doesn't exclude the other," Zoya nodded.
"I was just so struck by the force with which I'm his home. I didn't realize Australia was such a part of me. It's not just the people that I miss. It's the country as well. My feet walking on Australian soil. If you told me this might happen before I moved away, I would have laughed it off. Would have called it utter nonsense. But now I can no longer do that. There's this pull. I'm much more of an Australian than I thought I was, even though I never considered myself a patriot, and especially as a journalist. I've always been very critical of my country. But none of that seems to matter anymore."
"Do you want to plan a trip home?"
"We already have one planned for Christmas."
"So? That doesn't mean you can't go home before."
"I guess it's also the notion that everyone I used to know is almost literally on the other side of the world. Even though we have the internet and FaceTime and email, they always seem so far away. I seem so far away from my former life."
"You shouldn't underestimate the psychological effects of geographical distance. The world may be globalized, but that doesn't mean our emotions, let alone our genes, have caught up."
"I'll look into planning a brief visit tomorrow."
The mere prospect seemed to dislodge that ball in the pit of Zoya's stomach a little already. "Have I told you lately how much I appreciate you moving here for me?"
"You can never tell me too many times."
Zoya put her glass down as well. Iris was sunk into a deep sleep in her lap. She scooped her hands underneath the cat and gently laid her down on the sofa. She hardly budged. Zoya scooted closer to Camille and kissed her on the cheek.
"Tell me again.
In words or through other means." Camille let her lips hover next to Zoya's ear.
"Both."
Zoya's breath stuttered in the back of her throat.
"Avec plaisir,"
Camille said, and then proceeded to show Zoya how much she cared. Not using any words at all. Aurore.
"I refuse to feel the shame that La Roche administration wants me to feel," Aurore said. "Moreover, I couldn't, even if I wanted to. Sexual expression has never been anything remotely shameful for me. Not back in the day when I was part of the cast for that movie, and not now, 2 decades later. If it makes me persona non grata at the Élysée, so be it. I wasn't very welcome there the last time anyway."
Aurore wasn't entirely sure how Anne Riviere would react to her bringing up the video, but what she was saying had to be expressed regardless. "I'm sick of La Roche being such a two-faced panderer to the center, even to the left. She's trying to pass as semi-progressive, or at least more down the center than most of her party,
but deep down, she's not. She hasn't even reacted to my bill proposal yet. How long has it been? A week?
Anne shook her head.
If she keeps up her silence, she's going to pay for it in the polls. Le Matin has one coming up. She's going to take a beating.
Isn't that what you want?
Aurore inquired.
Of course. But I want other things as well. Let's just say I have a more long-term vision.
Aurore nodded.
I just need your guarantee that this video will never be used for political reasons.
I truly don't care about this video, or whatever else it is you've ever done, Aurore. I care about your support and your advice. Both have been invaluable to me.
She stroked her chin.
What I am worried about, however, is you getting the same guarantee from the La Roche camp. Clearly someone there is holding enough of a grudge to have dug it up. How can we be certain they won't use it against me?
We can never be certain.
It felt so much more natural for Aurore to be sitting across from Anne Riviere than from Dominique La Roche, no matter how much she admired the president. Birds of a feather flocked together, and Aurore would never feel 100% comfortable amongst members of the MLR.
And I don't trust Solange Garceau as far as I can throw her, but I do trust Stephanie Matisse. The only problem is that she and Solange are at war, but in the end, La Roche always has a final say.
That's not enough. I may not care about the video, but voters will. If cornered on the eve of the next election, La Roche may very well screw her so-called integrity and use it to paint me in a very bad light. That's not something I can have hanging over my head.
I understand. Our society is sadly far from being that tolerant. Do you want me to keep my distance?
No, I want you to get the guarantee. I want to fight La Roche on political issues. I know I have a good chance if I do. I want this video out of the picture for it to become a non-issue.
We both know that once a video like that makes it online, it can never be destroyed.
Anne nodded.
I'm well aware. The only option is to get both La Roche and her chief of staff's word of honor.
Aurore scoffed.
Their word will be enough.
It has to be.
Anne leaned over her desk.
If that can't be enough, well, we wouldn't want to use what we know about La Roche's partner, now would we?
One of the reasons why I support you is because I know you would never stoop that low, Anne.
Indeed, I wouldn't. So let's make sure the other party knows this.
Aurore sighed.
I never wanted to get involved in the politics of this. It's not my forte.
I know. But no one else can take care of this. Only you can.
Fine. I'll talk to Steph.
Aurore wasn't looking forward to that conversation.
Or Solange,
Anne said.
She's the one who started all this after all. It's time to shut her down.
This reminded Aurore of her initial plan to get Solange Garceau alone. Maybe Anne was right. Maybe that was what she needed to get all of this done. It had taken some convincing words on Aurore's part to get Solange to meet with her, but Aurore hadn't had to resort to any threats, for which she was glad. Solange Garceau was smart enough to put two and two together. Solange was due to arrive at Aurore's apartment near the Bois de Boulogne. She had spent the better part of her career working on the radio, so she wasn't a recognizable face. Solange was definitely known in political circles, but most people would walk past her without realizing the considerable amount of power she held. They could have met in public, but it was better to not take any risks. Besides, Aurore was glad to have this conversation behind closed doors, in the privacy of her apartment, without having to worry about anyone overhearing what might be said. Solange rang the bell at 8 in the evening, not a minute before, and not a minute after. Aurore buzzed her up, and while she waited for the president's chief of staff, she caught herself casting a critical glance over her living room. It wasn't too messy, but it wasn't exactly tidy either. Aurore enjoyed a bit of coordinated chaos. It made her place look cozy and lived in when she came home. She was sure Solange would judge her for not living in a hyper-clean environment. She dared to bet Solange's living quarters were meticulously vacuumed every single day. not leaving a single speck of dust in sight. But Aurore had long ago learned to dismiss other people's judgments of her. The knock on the door was sharp as well, as though Solange Garceau was physically incapable of being